History interview conducted by telephone on April 30, 2003 with Jerry Bredow, B-R-E-D-O-U-W, of Edmonds, Washington. Mr. Bredow wrote a script for a TV series called The Bold Ones, titled Angry Man. The script and episode played an important role in alerting the American public to the plight of ex-military corpsmen and the possibilities with a PA concept. Mr. Bredow also introduced Dick Moore's cartoonist to the PA concept, which eventually led to Chipper Wallet, a character in the cartoon, becoming a PA. This is Reginald Carter, and again the date is Wednesday, April 30, 2003. Okay, what I like to do is just get a little bit of background about you. Where did you grow up?
Kansas City.
Kansas City. Large family?
Nope. Only child.
Only child.
First parents.
Uh-huh. What did your parents do?
Well, nothing of note. That's a long story, but let's just say nothing worth mentioning.
Oh, okay. And did you, after high school, did you go to college or did you go out into the work world?
I was a trumpet player.
A trumpet player?
Yep, and I had no time for college. I couldn't have cut college anyway mentally. I just didn't have the chops.
Uh-huh.
But the trumpet playing chops I had. So I went out and in the dance band.
Okay, and this was in the 19...
That was from 36 to 40.
Okay.
I enlisted in the last cavalry regiment in the country in 1940.
Okay.
Went into active duty on October 23rd, 1940, in a band in the 127th Field Regiment. I don't know how much detail you want.
No, that's fine. The more I have, like I say, this is going to be part of our oral history archives, so
okay.
People will be very interested in your background. So you were in the Second World War in the cavalry. Did you end up overseas?
Well, the cavalry lasted about 30 days, and it suddenly became, they phased it out, and it became a field artillery unit.
Right.
And then I was a trumpet player for a couple of years, and then I went to Warrant Officer Bandmaster School.
Okay.
Became a band leader in the Air Force, and was discharged in 45.
In 45, okay. And was there any particular occasions y'all played for that's you remember?
Yeah, I conducted for Bing Crosby at the Hollywood Canteen.
Oh. Is that the way you got to Hollywood?
Well, that was the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, after service, what did you do?
Well, I tried to stay in the music business, but I wasn't really up to the competition in Los Angeles, which had probably the finest musicians in the country.
Right.
So eventually I married a girl whose father went to Fresno, California, in a job. Excuse me. And I found myself in Fresno, and I worked at the Fresno Bee newspaper for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Selling space, and also playing trumpet.
Okay.
And some of my friends and neighbors were doctors. I'd always had an interest in medicine. Thought I might want to be a surgeon as a kid, until my dad arranged for some kids in our group to go through the stockyards in Kansas City, which are big operation. And I, after having seen hogs slaughtered and sheep and cattle and smelled that blood, which I think I smelled that blood for the next 20 years, that was it for medicine. I was not going to be a surgeon after that.
Right. Okay. How and when did you get to Los Angeles and Hollywood?
Well, out of Fresno, I went up to San Francisco and was hired by Young and Rubicam Advertising as a writer, And then a couple years later, in late 59, I was sent down to L.A. to do some promos for a show called Hong Kong, which Henry Kaiser had bought to replace Maverick. And some of the promos that I did for Hong Kong attracted attention.
Mm-hmm.
And got me an offer from ABC to go back to New York and run their on-air promotion department.
Okay. Now, while you were in Hollywood, let's go back and pick up your growing interest about the plight of paramedics or military corpsmen who were serving as in paramedical roles. Do you recall when this and how this came to your attention?
Oh, boy. What do you think about it?
There was a case in Northern California. Do you remember if that was something you'd read? There was an article in Time magazine about that.
I doubt if that would have turned me on to the problem, although it certainly is on the subject. I mean,
yeah.
There was a doctor who needed another pair of hands, and when he found a pair of hands that he could use, the nurses, who did not like the idea that this physician's assistant concept was another pair of hands, which they had been doing very ably and illegally,
mm-hmm.
giving shots and stuff for years. And they rose up and said, the hell with this. And that's why a lot of big, burly men these days are called nurse.
Yeah.
Because they, that's what happened.
Yeah.
I can't think what turned me onto this. No, probably if I sat down and scarred my head, I might be able to, but not
right now. But anyhow, it came to your attention one way or the other, and you became somewhat interested in the fact that you'd been in the military, too, I guess, kind of whetted your appetite about this corps.
There's about a 2 or 3 year dissolve here, because I went back to New York for ABC. First of all, I worked for ABC in Hollywood for, I think, 3 or 4 years.
Oh, okay.
Then went back to New York in a bigger job, at which I failed. And in 1968, I think, I came back to California.
Okay.
Just freelancing.
Right.
And that's when the medical thing would have
came up.
Would have taken hold. Yeah, in 69 or 70.
Yeah. You'd said in the letter of correspondence that you had spent a good bit of money and had traveled. You couldn't come to the East Coast, but you'd gone up to Seattle and talked to, Dick Smith up there about what was going on. And you had this idea for a script, and you were getting background information for it. So it seemed like you really got involved and started doing some research and background on it.
What's the date of the letter, 70?
Yeah, it's around 1970. It was probably a year before the Bold Ones, the episode actually aired. I believe that aired in October of 1970, so I have a feeling this was early 1970, late 69 or early 70.
That sounds right, yeah.
So as you got into this and you looked at the plight of these corpsmen, and I believe out of this case in Northern California, there was some legislative action being taken in California to protect these physicians that were using these military corpsmen or paramedicals.
Well, you know, at this point, I can't remember if it was to protect the corpsmen or to put more restrictions on the doctors as to who they could use and what they could do.
Yeah, I think that was it. So you think the first attempts were to do more restriction?
Yeah.
And then later it turned into giving them more protection.
Well, I'm not sure about that last part.
Okay.
I just don't remember, but I remember Hal Bibby got fired because of the incident. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I caught up with him, he was, I think, down in Santa Rosa or someplace on the coast of California.
Right. Right. And so the idea, tell me how you got in the position to be able to develop a script then for the Bold Ones. You said that you had was doing some freelancing, but you were there and you ran into, was it Roy Higgins at that time?
Roy Huggins.
I mean Huggins.
Huggins was the guy I worked for when I first came to Hollywood at 20th Century Fox. He produced Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I met him. And I kept in touch with him. And he then later went to Universal, where he was producing The Bold Ones.
Okay.
And so when I got this idea, The Bold Ones at that time, I think, had three different sections. It was the legal, medical, and maybe it was just two.
No, there was three, and I think one was like an attorney general, or I mean, a district attorney or something. But
Yeah. I think that was a legal one. I've forgotten that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, interestingly enough, mine didn't go into the medical thing; it went into the legal.
Yeah.
Because he got busted. The character got busted for mm-hmm. saving a life up in this remote town where the doctor had died some time earlier. His clinic was still sitting there, and the townspeople begged him to become their doctor. He says, "I can't be a doctor." You know.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, there was a bad accident. This is where my medical research kind of helped. Someplace I stumbled across a Thane-Stockin tube, which is a thing that they put in the esophagus to stop esophageal bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him fashion, this guy was bleeding heavily, I had him fashion one of those out of a balloon and blew it up and stuck it in the guy's esophagus, which stopped the bleeding and saved the guy's life.
Only
temporarily. Later he died, and then that this guy had been guilty of practicing medicine, so they brought him up.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the episode was that a doctor in a nearby town agreed to take him on as a physician's assistant, working in this little town, but under this doctor's complete supervision.
Right.
And this probably in reality wouldn't have been possible, but in TV you could get away with anything. So we had a happy ending.
So now you were what was your job at the time you were freelancing and writing this script?
That's it. I was just freelancing.
Oh, you were freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you had the script idea and you'd wrote some stuff down. You'd done the background checks and you took it to Roy and he got very interested in it.
Yeah, he saw it was a hell of a concept.
So he helped you in writing the script, putting it together, because you never written a script up to that time, had you?
I hadn't gotten paid for one, no.
Okay.
Haven't sold any.
So you'd given a lot of ideas and had produced some scripts.
Well, I forget what the hell I was doing in 69. Let me think a minute. I'm 83, you know. The
yeah,
senior moments don't
I know.
help anything. I was doing sales films. I did one for Star-Kissed Tuna and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
I was pretty good with words, and I knew enough about... Actually, I had good film connections, because when I was at ABC, I had to hire a lot of film people to do my promos for me.
Okay.
So I knew my way around the business. So if I would go out and sell some company on doing a sales film, I had the tools to bring it off, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing.
Oh, okay. So you were promoting at that point in time and doing some of your freelancing, but you had got to know a lot of people through your earlier position at ABC.
Yeah.
Was that while you were in New York or when you came back to Hollywood?
Hollywood.
Yeah. Okay, so you knew a number of people. Now, in your relationships, you eventually ended up at Universal from 1970-77, as you told me, as director of broadcast promotions.
Yeah.
And that was with Universal or ABC at that time?
Universal.
Mm-hmm. And then out of that came a job for ABC?
No. The job at ABC came out of 20th Century Fox,
where
I was in late 59.
Oh, okay.
And early 60.
Okay, let me just go back and get this. So in the 50s and 60s, you were with Fox.
No, I was with Fox for 59 and a little bit of 60, just about a year.
Okay, and then that led into your first job with ABC.
That's right.
Okay, and then
there
you...
There was only one ABC job.
Oh, okay.
And that was roughly from 60 to 67, I think, 68 maybe.
Oh, okay. And then eventually you went to work for Universal.
Yeah, in 70.
Okay, and stayed there until about 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, where did you go?
Retired.
Oh, you retired in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I think
my wife was working at Disney, and she was bringing in the paychecks, so I was able to retire.
Okay, I think I had it a little bit backwards that you had, after you left Universal, you went to ABC, but you were at ABC before this, and that's what led up to
that's
it.
That's right.
Okay. I think in your letter you said that you were trying to write another script for another episode, and I forget which one it was, but that one didn't get off the ground.
Yeah, we came up with a thing called the Medic Commandos.
Uh-huh.
And these were guys who would be in the rural communities or between the rural communities who went to the accidents by helicopter.
Uh-huh. Flying
paramedics.
Yeah. Okay, so you were ahead of the gun there, too, thinking about eventually what all hospitals have now.
That's right.
Medevac.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was especially helpful out there in the desert because, you know, if you're 5 hours away from a bleeding artery, forget it. But you can get there in 20 minutes by chopper, so. The trouble was the script got made.
Right.
But it was just too much along the plot lines of the first one, where the guy got in trouble and then got out of trouble. And at that time, Roy was on to other things and couldn't give me as much help as I needed, so I just didn't do as good a job with that one.
Okay, but you did say that out of this script about this former corpsman who is basically charged with practicing without a license. A series did originate from that, the idea for Emergency, is that correct?
That's right.
About paramedics.
Yep.
And that was based in California?
Oh, Los Angeles. Yeah, Los Angeles. I don't know about that. That was on for years.
It was. I remember that series quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Webb produced it.
Right. Okay. Somewhere along in 69, you got in touch with Dick Moores, who was the cartoonist for Gasoline Alley.
Right.
Do you recall how you knew Dick Moores, or did you just...
I didn't. I just saw that Chipper had been a medic.
Foreman, okay.
And I thought, hell, this is the way to publicize physician's assistants or paramedics. And I wrote him.
Yeah.
And he did it. And he sent me Christmas cards for a long time after that. He was appreciative.
Yeah. I have correspondence from him to Bob Howard, and it sounds like you suggested to him that he get in touch with Bob, and I assume he did that.
I think he must have, yeah.
Yeah, and then Bob followed up with that, had him here at Duke a few times. And out of that, I have an intercom, which was the newsletter published here at the Medical Center, of where actually they launched the cartoon, and that was dated March of 1971 when the first edition came out, or about Chip becoming a PA.
Right.
So you really are the one. See, I always thought Bob Howard just called Dick Moores up. I didn't realize that you were the one that had instigated that, I guess.
Yeah, that was me. And I also they were going to drop the strip in the L.A. Times at one point. And I'd forgotten how we organized, but a bunch of us went down and picketed the building, saying, don't drop the strip because we like it.
Yeah.
And because I grew up with Gasoline Alleys.
Mm-hmm.
Skeezick's about my age. So I felt personal about that.
Yeah. Was a brilliant idea, and it really did get the concept out to the public very quickly. Any other thoughts about that period of time and your feelings about the PA concept and where it's evolved to today? I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with it, but there's 50,000 PAs out there in practice today, and there's 133 accredited programs with about 10,000 students in it. And one sociologist says that he believes it's probably one of the most innovative things that happened in American medicine in the last century. So,
well, if you look at the bare bones of it, I don't know what the percentage would be, but well, the nurses can sure as hell tell you that a lot of what the doctor does, somebody else can do.
Yeah.
The wisdom to know whether this dosage should be increased or that dosage should be changed to a similar medicine, but one which will have a different effect than the original one, that's got to be the doctor's province.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as an extra pair of hands, as the registered nurses were quick to point out, it doesn't take a whole separate education to do that, although there, as you say, there are physician's assistance programs. I went through the EMT training myself at one point down at the Burroughs Hospital in L.A., and I know that between us and the paramedics, we did ours in about a year.
Yeah.
The paramedics, hell, they were in there for at least a couple of years.
Right.
I don't know what a physician's assistance program would be as opposed to a paramedic, but the point I'm making is that at that point, the doctor was God and nobody could do anything that except him, and that just isn't the case realistically.
Yeah, and that's exactly what came out of this, was the fact that there was a lot done, that someone with 2 years of formal training and then married to a practice and being supervised by a physician, that you could go a long way with that.
Oh, yeah.
And that has proven to be so, and it's proven to be economically sound idea too. So
yeah.
So it really has worked out. Did you ever talk to Dick Moores by phone or in person, or was it always by correspondence?
Oh, I think it must have been correspondence. I don't recall ever talking to him. He might have called me one time, but
yeah.
I don't remember.
How about Bob Howard? Did you ever talk to him by phone, or was
not
that?
Not that I remember.
Okay, so every.
Yeah, and I might have, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it was all correspondence. How about Dick Smith? You actually went up to the medics in Seattle, Washington, so you must have met him personally?
I don't even remember the name.
Okay, he was the director up there, and one of the letters you wrote indicates that he wasn't really in favor of this episode. He thought it was going to shake up things too much. He was trying to smooth the waters up in Washington, and he just didn't know how this was going to play out.
You know, now you're beginning to jog my memory. At some point, I went back to Chicago, I think it was, to a convention. I don't know who the hell the convention was. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And some young fellow I was talking to, he says, well, we want to be careful not to polarize people, you know. And that was exactly what you're talking about, except that I don't know if that was in connection with the Seattle visit. But at some point, somebody was apprehensive about going too fast on this and getting people turned around to where they were against it before they knew what it was.
Yeah, it must have been Dick Smith or some other people in the AMA. I think in one of these letters you said that you had, in a memo to Howard that you copied the letter to Dick Moores, you say, here's a copy of my latest letter to Mr. Moores regarding Gasoline Alley. I also sent a copy to Bob Root, R-O-O-T, of the AMA Chicago, their communications guy. So you must have, in your research, been in touch with the AMA about some of these issues.
Must have, yeah, because as I say, I think this is in Chicago where I was warned about, I remember the word polarizing.
Mm-hmm. So did you go to Chicago and talk to some folks at the AMA about all this?
I think I must have.
Yeah. So you were getting around. You were really educating yourself about all this.
Yeah, well, it looked like a major opportunity, but I didn't know what the hell to do about it. But
yeah.
As I say, when this PhD dissertation lady came along, she fell on my neck like, my God, this is solid gold, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna look that thesis up.
Oh, you got to do that, yeah.
Okay, so let me just summarize and see if I have this straight. You grew up in Kansas. You did
Missouri.
In Missouri, you didn't go to college, but you ended up in the were a trumpeter and got into a band. Enlisted in the Army, or was drafted?
No, I enlisted.
Enlisted there, then remained in music in the band. Finally, ended up in the Air Force.
Air Force band leader.
Band leader, and then was discharged from the Air Force. And from there, you have to remind me.
Well, I kicked around Hollywood for a couple of years in minor musical jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
But I saw that was not for me. So when I had a chance to go up to Fresno and get a job, I did.
Okay. And then this led you to the job with ABC?
No, that led me to 10 years on the newspaper.
Oh, on the newspaper.
Fresno B.
Fresno B, okay.
BWE.
B.
B-double-E, yeah.
Okay, B, okay.
As in Bumblebee.
Right. And so 10 years you were doing that.
Yeah, and 47 to 57.
Okay. And then
San Francisco, Young and Rubicon.
Right. And then from there?
To 59, I went down to 20th Century Fox.
Right.
And Roy Huggins.
Right. And then that
and
got...
About a year later, I went to ABC.
Right.
That was a New York job at first, and I convinced them it was a Hollywood job.
Right.
Because that was where the stars were. And I was able, I don't know if this is interesting or not, but I had the concept of getting the stars to promote their own shows.
Oh, yeah.
And I one time I had Bing Crosby and George Burns and Mickey Rooney and another guy who was playing No Time for Sergeants, Sammy Jackson, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All four of them in the same screen talking to each other about their show on Monday night on ABC.
Huh.
Well, this required visual, graphic sophistication, which didn't exist. And we didn't know whether we should go over to Warner Brothers and photograph Bing with a quarter of the lens visible and three quarters blacked out.
Oh, okay.
or if there might be a way to do this optically, and we finally found a way to do it optically. But the point was that ABC needed ideas, and I didn't know enough to know how little I knew. So I just said, hell, why don't we do this? And then somebody would say, you can't do that. And I would say, well, maybe you can, you know. So we had a wonderful time breaking all kinds of rules and making up new rules at ABC for 3 or 4 years there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, you were an innovator in a lot of different ways with the promotions and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been afraid of a new idea.
Yeah, and then eventually you were freelancing and then got into script writing and successful with this medical corpsman paramedic idea.
Yeah, I don't want to fly under false colors. I was never a successful script writer.
Yeah.
I was led through this thing by Roy Huggins, who was my mentor and my good friend. He just died here a few months ago.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I went into ABC again as a promo guy.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll make the distinction, you know.
Okay. So, but you did end up at working then for, did you say Fox first or?
Fox to ABC. And then eventually to Universal.
To Universal, and that's where you retired.
7 years, 70 to 77.
Right. And director of broadcasts, promotions, and coming attractions.
Mm-hmm.